Welcome to the Talent Development Think Tank Podcast, the number one podcast for learning and talent development professionals. Now here's your host, Andy Storch.
Welcome to the Talent Development Think Tank Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Storch, and I'm excited that you're joining me today for another great episode and conversation to help you up your game and improve your capabilities in the world of talent development. And today we're going to be talking more about leadership development, coaching, facilitating great programs, some topics that we've covered off and on recently, but they're some of the most popular topics that I'm finding out there in talent development. So I'm excited to jump into some of these with our guest today, Annalisa Jackson, who is an ICF certified somatic coach and trauma-informed facilitator with 8 years of experience leading well-being and leadership programs for global organizations. As the founder of Collective Flourishing, she helps values-driven teams and leaders manage stress with more ease, lead with clarity, and strengthen their connection with one another. Prior to launching Collective Flourishing, Annalisa worked in international peace building, where she led trainings on leadership, cross-cultural communication, resilience, and conflict resolution. And Annalisa is a certified coach in somatic coaching by the Strozzi Institute, holds a BA in intercultural studies and an MA in interreligious studies and the Next Economy MBA from Lyft Economy. And she's based in Oakland, California. And Annalisa, I'm excited to have you on the show. We were connected by a couple of mutual friends, Lena Mendoza and Emma Strong, who have both been guests on this podcast and members of the Talent Development Think Tank community over the years. And I want to get right into this topic of coaching and leadership and some of the work you do. And just before we started recording, you and I were talking about sort of our levels of desire for preparation. I've been noticing a lot lately as I've interviewed over 300 guests for this podcast that people tend to like sort of fall on different areas of a spectrum in terms of like how much they want to prepare. Like some people are like, I need every single question ahead of time. And some people are like, I absolutely don't want to prepare at all. And then there's also levels of introversion and extroversion, how you show up in conversations. And that's what you and I were talking about, because, you know, I said, you feel free to take your time to answer questions. And you said, oh, I like to pause here and there. And I said, I'm glad you told me that ahead of time, because I'm extroverted and I'm very uncomfortable with silence. To which you said what?
I said, I love shared silence. Let's get into it.
Yeah, I've had to learn to embrace shared silence as a facilitator, especially. That's been one of the biggest challenges. I've been facilitating workshops for over 10 years, and to ask a question and let the group sit with that question has always been a challenge for me. But I've had conversations with a lot of good friends over the years who are introverts. And I had one recently where I asked, you know, are you okay with us just walking in silence? And she was like, yeah, I love that. And I was like, I can't stand it. It drives me crazy. So it's just another reminder of how we're all different. We all have different personalities, right? Which is wonderful. Do you think that's helped you in the work that you do as a coach and a facilitator?
That's so funny. I actually really identify as an extrovert as well. And I think this piece around having space for shared silence is a capacity that I've built over time, because I think I used to be someone who's really quick to want to fill the space. And it's been mostly in my role as a facilitator where I've realized we miss out on a lot of really important people's perspectives if we don't create intentional pauses in the conversation and invite them to share. I used to facilitate these, we would call them family dinners in New York City with friends. And we would have a topic of conversation and everyone would chime in with their thoughts and ideas. And probably a couple months into doing it, I realized we're not hearing from people who are a little quieter, more introverted. And so as the facilitator, I started naming at the front end of the gathering, we're probably going to have some moments where I just invite us to take a moment to pause and to reflect on what all we've heard so far. And if you're someone who takes a little bit of extra time to think about what you want to say, this could be a moment for you to feel invited to share some of those reflections. Yeah. And I might even in that moment say, and if you've been sharing this whole time, I'd invite you to just take a moment to pause and sit with what's been shared.
Yeah.
But I think now in my work as a coach, when I'm sitting with people, there can be these moments of silence where that silence can produce a lot in our bodies. We can feel this discomfort. And I like to get really curious about that and invite my clients and people I'm working with to notice, yeah, what is it like to just be with what has already been said or be with the emotions that feel present?
Yeah. So this is absolutely a learned skill for you then, not just.
I would say so. Yeah.
Ah, that's great. So there's hope for me.
I would say so. Yeah.
So I started by introducing you as a certified somatic coach and trauma-informed facilitator. Can you explain a little bit more about what that means? I'm very familiar with coaching, but not this type or this form or this term somatic coaching.
Yeah. So somatic coaching, I'll start with that. So somatic comes from the Greek word soma, which means body as whole self. So it's thinking about how our bodies hold our thoughts, our emotions, and are a place of so much wisdom and possibility and learning. So often in our Western education system, we really only pay attention to like what's from our necks and up in terms of how we think and process information. Really, there's so much information and wisdom that our bodies hold that we can tap into, that we can learn from. And a lot of times when we experience challenges and stress, we're experiencing it in our body. But what we're trained to do is go to our mind to try to find the solution and to try to kind of work our way through that scenario rather than looking at what can we do to bring more calm or relax our bodies, and what are some of the ways that we can actually shift how we're holding ourselves physically to be able to feel more open and connected. So a lot of times with my clients, we'll look at situations where they're wanting to grow in a certain area. And we'll look at what are some of the patterns or habits that come up in those moments of stress? What are the tendencies that their bodies hold in those moments? And how can we actually slow down the reaction time to notice what comes up in those moments and start to practice new ways of holding their bodies and being in relationship to their whole selves in those moments. A lot of times, I'll share a practical example here. A lot of my clients are people who really want to bring more of their authentic, caring, confident self into the relationships that they're in, whether that's personal or in their work, in their teams. And a lot of them have a hard time like really asking for what they need in relationships. And so something that we'll do is we'll be talking about that scenario, and we'll start to pay attention to like what comes up for you when you're in a situation where you're trying to ask for what you need. Some of them might say, oh, I get this tightness in my chest, or I feel like something's blocking my throat, or I realize I'm squeezing my hands. And it can be so many different things for different people. But a lot of times just bringing little awareness to some of those things can actually really help, can help be indicators or clues that their bodies are tensing up in this situation. And so inside of somatic coaching, I teach different practices to help bring more of a grounded presence to those moments so that in those moments, people can make a choice about how they want to respond. Oh, if I like open up my shoulders and let my arms relax down at my sides, there's a good chance that the way that I enter into this conversation is going to be a lot more connected to myself, to the other person. They're not going to feel off because I'm not coming with this like tense energy. So that's just a practical example. And there are a lot more, I would say a lot of the things that I focus on inside of somatic coaching are like leading with more calm under pressure, building the authentic voice and presence. And that can include things like being gracious and clear with saying no when we need to say no, or when asking for what we need. So the somatic coaching work that I do is often in one-on-one contexts with leaders, but it's also in group settings where I'll go in and I'll introduce different grounding practices or ways of bringing more calm and groundedness into the work that we're doing. So a lot of times we, as many of us, have stress management techniques that work for us. Some of us like to run or bake or do things with our bodies to help kind of move stress through us. what I'm focused on and excited about teaching people through this work is how to bring those moments of calm and presence into the moments where you're under pressure, the moments where you are in a high stakes situation and you need to have internal resources to be able to show up for that moment with more clarity, with more presence, with more groundedness. So those are the kinds of things that I both work on with leaders and then bring to groups, which brings me to trauma-informed facilitation.
I can see how that would involve or require more silence or pausing, because it seems like there'd be a lot more introspection involved to really try to get in touch with yourself and your body and like feel or sense how you are feeling things or how things are processing through you.
Exactly. Yeah.
And what about the idea of being a trauma-informed facilitator? Tell me more about that.
So being a trauma-informed facilitator, to me, it means that I'm paying attention to how safety is created in a group process. How there are different elements that play into that. I'm thinking about social context, who's in the room, what are the power dynamics, how does my identity as a white woman facilitator play into that? And how do I set up this gathering, this event in a way that invites people into co-creating that sense of safety? And I'm especially thinking about this in contexts where I'm leading a training that's focused on growth, on learning, on connecting and sharing and with each other's experiences. I'm sure we've all been to events that were really poorly facilitated, where you could tell that someone did not think about the dynamics of the group or ask questions that just seemed like, whoa, no one's going to answer that in a group context here. We haven't built trust or safety to do that. So there's a lot of the work in trauma-informed facilitation starts before the event or training even starts. It's in thinking through some of those dynamics, but then a lot of it too is it's in the setup of the event. It's in the setup of the training program and inviting the group to co-design a way of working and being together that's gonna create space for that safety and for that connection to take place. Another big part of being a trauma-informed facilitator is making sure that consent or the ability to choose or opt in to whatever we're doing is built into really each step of the process. So in a lot of the group work that I do, we're asking questions about how we show up under pressure, about ways that we hold stress. And that can get quite personal for people. And depending on the group that we're in, people may or may not feel ready to share certain things. And so there's a way of framing questions. There's a way of even setting up the actual physical space that enables people to opt in to the things that they, into the questions that they feel ready to share. And there's a way of doing that that kind of slowly builds more safety. I use a lot of breakout rooms and peer discussions before getting into big group conversations around some of that stuff. Because the nature of so much of the work that I do with groups and teams is connecting to their bodies, is starting to learn and pay attention to more of what's coming up for them in that space. I think this is especially important because for some people that might be really new and it might be something that takes some time to warm up to or to be ready for. And so that's where I weave these two together, and they're definitely informed by each other.
So you talked about this idea of trauma-informed coaching and facilitating and working with groups who have, it sounds like, been through traumatic or difficult situations. And I'm wondering if you can give me an example of a time when you facilitated for a group like that or what that looked like. You obviously don't have to tell me the name of the group, but maybe an example of what that looked like so people can have a better understanding of how this works.
Yeah, I'd love to actually zoom out and share examples outside of the peace building world, even though so much of the training and the beginning seeds of this work started there. I think so much of it is applicable to leaders who are working in high stress contexts and really care about the work that they're doing and want to lead well. An example that I can share is that I recently was invited to come and lead a half day workshop for a company. It's a social impact company, and they're working to address really broken systems in healthcare. And there was a lot of burnout that they were navigating and wanted some support around how to manage that on their team. And so one of the ways that I was thinking about providing that training to them was how to create an environment in which they could both share and resonate with their experiences with each other and also build new skills and deepening their capacity to hold and manage stress. And those two things I held also in context with thinking about who's in the room. Could there be power dynamics of different levels of management, and will it feel safe for them to explore and share those things? So the way that I set up the event was really taking into consideration those questions and doing some work with them as a group at the beginning of the day to talk about ways that we could build that shared trust and also to really emphasize from the offset that participating or answering all the questions was something that they could choose to do and that was they could step into.
Yeah, there's so much complexity behind the scenes that a lot of times we don't think about. Every single person, you know, every single human in our organization has had their own background of experiences, upbringing, probably some type of trauma in their background somewhere.
100%.
Even just the experiences they've had this week and this day and their own interpretations of what's going on in the news and the world forms a lot of how they show up and who they are. So this is a good lead-in. I was going to ask you next, how can we take the lessons from this work you're doing, you know, especially for people listening who work in talent development, learning and development, and use those to think about creating more of an inclusive environment or more cohesive teams in our organizations who work better together?
I think there are several ways that leaders can be thinking about creating more inclusive gatherings and environments. And the first is really paying attention to their own presence as they enter a room. I think as people who are leading and facilitating meetings, we have such a possibility and such a power really in that moment to set the tone for the meeting, to set the pacing. Even things like the speed of our voice or the register of our voice can signal to others. Or like things like urgency, which can put us in more of an anxious or dysregulated state. So even just paying attention to how we're speaking and how we're entering into those spaces can really make a difference in creating a felt sense of safety for people in the group. And we know that when people feel safe and connected and trusting, there's so much more possibility for creativity, for collaboration. And yeah, as leaders who are responsible for those spaces, I think the burden can often be on us, and like in a good way, to do some of our work to look at how can I show up in a more grounded place here and do that to be in service of my team or of this group. The second piece I would say is also in thinking about the design of these gatherings, really thinking about things I've already mentioned of social context, your own identity as a facilitator, and any power dynamics that might come with that, and thinking about how to create more spaces of shared safety. Is that more breakout rooms so that more people's voices can be heard? Is that having some shared group agreements from the beginning to talk about how you want to be together in this learning space? I think especially in contexts where we want group shared learning to take place, we need to be thinking about how to be facilitating conversations and inviting in group connection in a way that is creating space for different ways of processing learning, having different lived experiences, and not creating just one way of being as the norm, because that can often marginalize people who might not feel like they can share their experience. Yeah, so I think those would be two of the things that I would recommend. I also really recommend, people explore, if you haven't already, explore more resources around embodiment and around, yeah, somatic coaching or facilitation, really looking at how we're bringing our whole selves into spaces of learning and connection. I think that there is so much possibility for thinking about experiential learning and how we remember and change and grow that is just coming into more of our like learning and development trainings now, that we're moving past just theory based and head knowledge into how do we design really effective trainings that help people practice new habits and new skills and create containers for them to really get their whole selves involved, which whether it's called embodiment or not, I think those are embodied ways of learning is when we're practicing new habits, not just thinking about different ways of being. We're actually trying to do different things.
Yeah, there's a lot of value in being prepared. And there's also a lot of value in being present with a group and being able to pivot and shift and adapt to what's going on with that group. And so awfully admit for myself, I've never been very good at the preparation side. I'll prepare when I need to, but sometimes I'll forget. But the flip side of that is I'm often very good sort of pivoting in the moment with a group or whatever's going on. But, you know, there's value in both. Like we need the preparation and that side of things as well. I'll use that to transition into the leadership side, because I know you've worked with leaders. We're talking about creating more inclusive environments, more psychological safety, for lack of a better term, a place where people can show up as themselves and really work cohesively in teams. What are some things that leaders can be doing and thinking about? How can being more aware of their bodies have, you know, be helpful to them as well? I know that's work that you do, but how can leaders think about approaching their work as a leader to support creating, you know, better environments in the workplace?
Yeah, I think this piece around being aware of their bodies is something I'd like to share a little more on. I think because so much of how we show up is knowledge and head driven, we can end up really prioritizing just the parts of the thinking and strategizing parts of ourselves rather than the parts that are more connected to intuition, connected to this kind of inner wisdom. I think that's something that gets overlooked a lot and undervalued in leaders is our ability to make clear decisions based on like this inner knowing. I'm someone who used to overthink and spiral in my decision-making processes quite a bit. And not that never happens anymore, but I think through my own embodiment and somatic leadership journey process, I've become someone who can more quickly listen, pause, slow down, listen to, and trust what is the wisdom of my body telling me? What is my intuition leading me here? And that has been a really helpful tool in this process. I think one of the really important pieces in leadership is how we manage stress and ambiguity. And for me, somatics and embodiment has been a huge tool in being able to slow down my reaction time. And rather than when something activating happens, oh, I'm stressed and now I'm just reacting, being able to recognize where is that stress showing up in my body? How do I pause here, reflect on what this is about, and then respond in a way that's so much more in alignment with my values, with how I want to show up for my team or my collaborators. And I think that piece is such an important part of leadership development. And from my own experience is often not addressed in a lot of our leadership development programs. We have strategies around, and I used to have all the head knowledge, all the strategies around things that you can do to prevent or mitigate stress and exercise and nutrition and all these things. But when it comes to that moment of you're in a heated conversation or you're disagreeing with someone, and I think it's so common that in those moments, something takes over. Like we feel like, oh, now I'm just saying things that I, from this place of stress. And then later, those are the moments we have to go back and reflect on and course correct. But I think there's this capacity that is possible to grow how we respond under pressure. And I think that's where a lot of that awareness of body and emotion and the connection that's there can help us in how we react or respond in those moments.
Yeah.
And how we lead. Yeah. How we lead under pressure, I think is something that I work on with a lot of the leaders that I work with, is helping them really slow down, tune into what's going on here. Cause so often our bodies and the reactions that come up, they're trying to protect and take care of something that's really important to us. It could be our sense of safety and survival. It could be a sense of like belonging and connection to the people we're working with, or even our own sense of value and dignity. And if something in that is being threatened, oftentimes our bodies and minds know how to really quickly take over to protect that. And we don't often make that connection that what's happening is in response to taking care of something that's actually really important. And so for me, over the years of being in this journey with myself and with other people, I see that the more that we can pause and slow down in those moments of stress, the more there's possibility for tenderness and empathy towards those parts of ourselves that get stressed out in these situations or that feel overwhelmed in certain contexts. And that tenderness or empathy towards ourselves can really change. Like, I believe people can change a ton.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And I think that acceptance can go a long way. And then it can also make us so much more empathetic and generous as leaders to people on our team who we see going through a hard time or showing up in a certain way that might be so challenging. And we are trying so hard and we can't understand why they keep showing up in this certain way. And yeah, I think oftentimes I like to ask the question of like, what is this taking care of for that person? Like, what is so important to them that they're doing everything they can, or even they're subconsciously doing everything they can to protect some underlying need that isn't being met here.
Mm. You touched on some really important things there. As we record this and release soon after in February 2024, I'm timestamping that because I've been having a lot of conversations with people in different roles in L&D around in different organizations. And my feeling right now is that more and more companies lately have been trying to do more with less. I know that's sort of we've been saying and doing that for a long time, but you can see it in the numbers. If you look at quarterly earnings reports in the stock market over the last 6 months or so, a lot of organizations have been cutting costs, which often involve letting people go, and yet they're achieving more growth and revenue increases, revenue growth. And so it applies to me, they're doing more with less. And I've had conversations with so many people that seem more stressed than usual in the work that they're doing. And so I think it's really important, especially if you're in that type of situation, to do exactly what Annalisa just said, to pause and to get in touch with your body and who you are and your health. And, you know, maybe take the time to take a little break, to take a little pause, check in with yourself, check back in with what's most important, and help your people do that as well, right? Back in 2020, there was a lot of burnout. The topic of mental health was and well-being was sort of trending. We saw a lot of organizations investing in it. I don't know if I see as much of that now, but we have an opportunity to support each other and our colleagues in that by checking in with each other and checking in with ourselves to make sure we're okay.
I think that's so right, Andy. And I think so many of the challenges that teams experience are because of the interpersonal communication challenges that come up. And I think so much of that could be mitigated or prevented if people were slowing down a little bit more and pausing a little more often throughout their day, just to do even like a 10-second, 1-minute check-in of how am I doing? What's going on? What do I need? How do I really want to respond in this situation?
Yeah.
And is it in alignment with who I want to be as a leader? Because it's easy to just spin off of the pressures and the reactions.
Yeah. Right. Just keep reacting and responding, but can we stop and be a little more intentional with what we're doing, how we're communicating, how we're treating others, how we're spending our time? Annalisa, you've made a few kind of hints of different changes you've made over time. It sounds like you've been on quite a journey. What difference has this work made in your own professional life?
Mm. Yeah, I feel so grateful for discovering somatic coaching and somatic practices as a way of growing and transforming. I would say before my journey with somatics and embodiment, I was definitely someone who was super into personal growth and very health conscious and had great routines around caring for myself. But this piece around connecting, really listening to what's going on in those moments of stress has been such a game changer. I'm also someone who lives with a chronic health condition. That means that it's really important for me to pay attention to stress, and when it shows up in my body, it can very quickly become something that changes the course of my day. Mm. And yeah, I think I've gained tools to really slow down and honor that in a way that means I'm no longer having these burnout cycles that I used to have. I used to push myself really hard and then get sick and then have to take all this time off of work and then get back, and just that cycle was on repeat for many years. And I think being someone now who is more gentle with myself helps with that. And I feel like I can have so much more sustainability in the work that I care about. And it's also helped me bring a lot more confidence to how I show up. And because there's a clarity in who I want to be, there's ways that I've been able to build, more of a confidence and a clarity in how I make decisions and how I move through the world that, I don't think just reading books about leadership could have gotten me. It was actually the experience of doing daily practices that helped me recognize where the tension was living in my body and shifting out of that. And one of my favorite things about somatic work is that our body has so many, it's like it has so many clues that it gives us about how we're doing. So if I'm in a conversation with someone and I start to notice, my shoulders are curling into myself, I am leaning forward in this conversation, that can tell me something is a little off here, and I'm uncomfortable, or I'm not feeling fully grounded and connected. So now that I have that awareness that's one of my patterns when I'm stressed, I can, instead of in that moment trying to assess all the ways I could try to get unstressed, I just pull my shoulders back, lean back into my chair. And that then sends this cue back to my body of okay, I'm safe here. I'm good. And I can remember in that moment that I'm someone who has commitments and has a way that I want to show up, and come back to that just in this microsecond of a moment, because I caught myself in this posture that if I kept doing that, if I kept curling in or leaning off my chair into my screen, which is something that I do often, I see clients do often, it's just going to perpetuate that feeling of stress, urgency, pressure. But just by leaning back and feeling my feet on the ground, I can often come back to a place that's more clear.
I like that. Yeah, I think it's important thinking about your posture, how you are leaning in or out of a situation. I'm standing right now with my feet on the ground, so I can't really get caught leaning too far forward. It's a good habit I've gotten into with calls and interviews. The last thing I want to ask you about, Annalisa, since most of the people listening to this podcast work in talent development and leadership development and work with leaders and developing leaders, how would you advise them on cultivating more awareness of the interconnection of all these things to help leaders become more effective in their roles and really use some of the things you talked about in general to develop people?
One thing I would say is making learning programs as experiential as possible. There's a lot that we can learn from ourselves and from each other when we have time to also slow down and be introspective. And I think sometimes there can be this pressure to fit as much in as possible, or to really pack in a lot of things into a training. And I find it so valuable to put less, to have less content and more time for reflection, more time to really trust that when people have space and the invitation to reflect on their own selves, their areas of strength, of growth, that there's a lot of possibility there rather than just like, yeah, filling the space with theory and with things that we're trying to teach, which there's, I mean, there's so many valuable things to be learned, but I think having space for digesting it and for really thinking about ways to practice new habits and behaviors is something that's so important. Another thing that I think is important is looking at stress management and self-awareness around our tendencies of what how do we respond and react under pressure as a leadership competency to really develop. Looking at, I would be looking at bringing practical trainings around that, bringing in people who can support teams and groups of people in, and really building their capacity to be with ambiguity, to be with change. I think that's so much of what our current workforces are navigating right now is just ongoing ambiguity and change. And so, looking at really what are the skills and tools that we need to build our capacity for that. And obviously that's something that I care a lot about and love to bring to teams. And it's an area that I love to help partner with team leaders or managers and thinking about how they're building that for themselves as individuals, but also supporting their teams and groups with that.
Annalisa, this has been a great conversation. There's so many more directions we can go and things we can delve into, probably just scratching the surface. For anybody listening who wants to get in touch with you and maybe talk more about this, where's the best place for them to go?
Yeah, I would love to be in touch with anyone who's interested in bringing trainings around resilience and well-being and stress management to their teams, or if there's any leaders that are wanting to build and grow their capacity for managing ambiguity and stress. I also work one-on-one with leaders. LinkedIn is a great way to connect with me. Annalisa Jackson is where you can find me. You can also send me an email, annalisa@collectiveflourishing.com. And yeah, I would love to be in touch. I work closely with a co-facilitator too when working with bigger groups. And so if there's training needs that you have, I'd love to be in touch about what that could look like and design something that would really meet the needs of your team.
Excellent. Well, Annalisa, thank you so much for being here and sharing so much of your experience and wisdom. Again, I know there's so much more we can talk about, and you're going to hang on because we do have our bonus Q&A we're going to record for those listening to the podcast. I hope this was informative, educational, inspirational to you. Maybe you took some notes. Maybe you thought about some ways that you can pause and check in with your body and your mind and back in with some of your leaders and support them in creating more inclusive environments, more psychological safety, more trust, more cohesive teams. So make sure you take some type of action with this. And of course, you can reach out to Annalisa if you want help. And if you want to learn more about our podcast, as well as our community and our conference, you can find all of our information at tdtt.us. That's tdtt.us. So thank you again for listening. Hope you'll share this with others and that you'll do something kind for yourself and others today. Talk to you next time.